Well, we continue our series Doing Church, and today I want to talk about what has become a dirty word in many Bible churches. So what is that word? Well, the word is faithfulness. You're on holiday, you've got two churches to choose from. One is described as thriving, the other as faithful. Which do you choose? Or evangelism, two churches again. One talks about the challenges and the opportunities for the gospel, and the other speaks of being a faithful witness. Which sounds more full on for Christ? Many years ago, I was preaching at a church with a view. And after the morning service, one of the elders said to me, "You were faithful today." And I knew that I bombed. Faithfulness has become a dirty word, hasn't it? But did you listen to the reading? What does Christ seek from his disciples? His Lord said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." So what does Christ seek? Faithfulness. On Judgment Day, what will count is not whether or not we were a thriving church, but were we a faithful church? So, Christian friends, put from your mind all those negative connotations. Doing church, faithfulness. Come with me to the reading which we had, Matthew chapter 25 and verses 14 to 30. We have three things to say, 3 points. Point number one, well, let's look at the parable. Verse 14. "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man travelling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them." The master is going away. He'll be away for a long time. So to each of his servants, he commits the stewardship of his goods. He says to them effectively, "You're in charge while I'm away." But he doesn't divide the responsibilities equally. Verse 15, "To the most able servant, he gives 5 talents. And to the next 2, and to the least able, he gives 1. To each according to his own ability." He's a wise master, isn't he? He recognises that the least able will be overwhelmed if he gives him too much responsibility. And the most able will be frustrated if he's underused. Nevertheless, even to the least able, 1 talent is a considerable responsibility. Talent was a huge sum of money. A subjugated nation might pay a tribute, say, of 30 talents a year. It's about 6,000 denarii. What's that mean? Well, it's about 20 years' wages. So do your arithmetic. What do you earn in 20 years? So to each of the servants is given a considerable sum. And it's now up to them to use it for their master's good. Verse 15, "And to one he gave 5 talents, to the other 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey." Work hard, work for me, and don't rest until I return. Employ your powers fully in my service. So how faithful will they be? How faithful will they be now that the master is away? He's not there to stand watching over them. Well, let's find out. Verse 16. "Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also." So the 5 and the 2 talent servants, they work their socks off, don't they? You get the whole sense from them is that their Lord's service is their life. Their life is just bound up with pleasing him. They love their Lord. So they work every day with him in mind. In fact, they're trading as though he might return at any moment. You get this sense of, I've got no time to waste. In fact, it could be said that they're working as though actually their master is already present, watching over them. They're good, faithful, hard-working servants. Verse 18, "But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money." Well, the master's away. He won't be back for ages, if ever. So what's the hurry? Anyway, besides, he's only given me one talent. Hasn't given me five or two. He obviously doesn't trust me as much as he does the other servants. So why should I put myself out for him? Do you see? Faced with the opportunity to serve his Lord, he feels no urgency at all. And ends up doing nothing. He just can't be bothered. But he who had received one went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. Well, verse 19. The master now returns. It's time to settle the accounts. How faithful have each of the servants been? It's a day of reckoning, isn't it? Verse 20. So he who had received five talents came and brought five other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me five talents. Look, I have gained five more talents beside them. Can you hear the thrill in his voice? Throughout the long absence, his heart has been in his master's work. He's labored for this day. He's labored with his eye on the day when he would stand before his master and give account. In a sense, he's longed for this day. But now the master is here. Look! Look what I've done! Five more talents! Verse 21, his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. And if I can trust you with five talents, I can trust you with much, much more. Verse 21, you were faithful over a few things, I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Oh, you thought five talents was a lot? It's nothing compared to what I shall now give you. Having invested your life in my service, come, share the benefits. I'm not just giving you your portion, I want you to come and share in my portion. Enter into the joy of your Lord. And verses 22 and 23, it's the same for the two-talent servant as well. He's been equally faithful. Okay, so what about the third servant? The one-talent servant. Verse 24. And he who had received one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there, you have what's yours. I was just too frightened to do anything. And with good cause. You're hard on failures. You're a hard man. You exploit your servants. You expect too much. So I thought the safest thing to do was to do nothing. But look, I've kept your talent safe. Look, have back what's yours. So what does the master say? Well, he tears his excuses to pieces. Verse 26, but his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. And at least at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. You were frightened because I expect a lot from people. If that's what you really believed, you would have worked all the harder. Or at least you would have put my money in the bank to earn some interest. Yes, I mean, even the least would have been acceptable. But you haven't even done the least, have you? Who do you think you're fooling? Too frightened to do anything? It's all my fault because I'm a hard man, hard on my servants. If you really believed that, the last thing you'd have done is bury my talent in the ground. You simply thought, why should I bother? He won't be back for ages, if ever. You wicked and lazy servant. Verse 28. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. To the faithful and the trustworthy, more will be given. Their diligence returns in blessings on their head. This master, far from being a hard man, he's faithful, he's kind, he's generous. You might even say that his good and faithful servant is like the master. He who has worked diligently for me will have abundance. I'll give him more and more and more. But the wicked and the lazy, the unfaithful, even what they think they have will be taken from them. Verse 30, and cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And now we really see, don't we? For this parable is opening a door on another world. It's more than just a memorable story about a master and his 3 servants. This is about Christ and his disciples. So point number 2. What's it all about? What does it mean? Well, who's the master? Straightforward question, isn't it? He's Jesus Christ. And he's travelled to a far country. He's not here. And the emphasis is less on the distance. The emphasis is more on the length of time that he'll be away. And so far it's been 2,000 years. And his servants, 2 believers, he has entrusted the responsibility of faithful service. Now then, Christian friend, if Christ was visibly, physically here, right, when you got up in the morning, there he was standing in your room, you could see him, what impact would that have on your service? What impact would that have upon your commitment to his kingdom? What impact would it have upon your busyness, your labours in this church? Or if Jesus was to return tomorrow, what impact would that have on what you do today? Would you live today differently if you knew he was coming back tomorrow? But you see, because Jesus is away, and he has been away for 2,000 years, you can see the danger, can't you? We all feel that danger. We all know it. Because the danger is this. Instead of being up and doing for Jesus, because I can't see him, because he's not here, I can become preoccupied with my own interests, with this world. And when it comes to faithfulness, obedience, serving my master, engaging in the work and labour of the kingdom, I can think to myself, well, why should I bother? So says Jesus, stop. Get a grip on yourself. Listen. The kingdom of heaven is like a man travelling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Is Jesus fair? Is Jesus generous? Yes. We're not all made the same. But if I'm a 5-talent believer with 5-talent opportunities, Jesus, when he returns, is expecting 5 more. So if I let that sink in, I think, oh, I haven't got a moment to lose. And if I'm a 1-talent believer, my opportunities, my capacities are less. Well, Jesus is not expecting me to kill myself trying to be a 5-talent believer because I can't do it. I'm not made that way. From a 1-talent servant, he's only expecting another 1 talent. But he is expecting it. He's expecting fruit. Fruit in proportion to what he has given to me. To each according to his own ability. So, Christian friend, to you and to me, Christ has entrusted talents. And he has, hasn't he? The hours of the day. The strength in my body. The home in which I grew up. The gifts that he has placed in my keeping. The opportunities to do good. The word that I've been taught. The experiences of Christ which I've had. The Christians that I know. The work of the kingdom. Those are the talents that he has entrusted into my hands. All of us in some of those areas will be 5-talent believers compared to believers in other parts of the world. And some of those areas will be only 1-talent believers. And says Jesus, get trading. Use what I've given to you to increase my kingdom and to glorify my name. Work hard. Work urgently. Work faithfully. Work now. Don't delay. Don't do nothing. Don't live for yourself. Because sooner than you think, I shall return to settle the accounts. Remember the unprofitable servant. And so to point number 3, let's apply this teaching. So what is Christ looking for? It's that dirty word, isn't it? He's looking for faithfulness. Well done, good and faithful servant. Faithfulness. Faithfulness in proportion to what he has given to me. He's given to me 1 talent, he's not looking for another 5. He's not unjust. He's not a hard man. But he's looking for another 1. Faithfulness. So, Christian friend, have you a gift to speak? You know, you have a way with words. You can speak. Then use your words to heal, to build up, to proclaim the good news. And if you're not good at speaking, well, there's email. There are letters. How lovely it is to get a letter. We don't always feel the same way about emails, do we? But we always love getting letters. And there are texts. Things that you can do to encourage others. And anyway, all of us, we've only got 1 mouth, which God has given to us to do others good with, but all of us have got 2 ears. So all of us can be good at listening. Has God given you a big house and the gift of cooking? Well, open your doors and give some 5-talent hospitality. And if you've only got a bedsit and a packet of custard creams, is there no one you can invite round? Has God given you zeal, flair, energy? Well, don't go around thinking how much better you could do things in the church. Take the initiative. Start volunteering. Say, look, I put myself on the line. What can I do? Oh, I've got an idea. And if your powers are limited, do what you can do today. Do what he's given you to do today. And do it with all your heart. Be faithful over the few things he's put into your hands. And he will make you ruler over many things. Has the Lord given to you wealth? Then be generous. Be willing to share. Has God given you poverty? Well, then outgive them all by giving your 2 mites. Are you healthy and active? Is there no one you can visit? Sometimes people can't get out. They're housebound. They're unwell. Well, who's going to visit them? Who's going to go and see them? Who's going to go and encourage them? You're well. You're fit. You're strong. Go and see them. And if you can't get out, because sometimes we can't, can we? We're the ones who are unwell. Can you not pray? There was a preacher. He was visiting a church. He often used to visit his church on the Isle of Arran. And when he preached at this church, he always felt a real liberty and a power in the preaching. And then one day he discovered why. Just before the service, he had to nip back to the house where he was staying. And as he entered the house, he heard a voice. And the voice was praying. And the voice said, "Oh Lord, be with this young man who's come to preach the gospel. And that voice belonged to an old lady who was blind and bedridden. She couldn't get to the service, but she could get to the throne of grace, couldn't she? There's always something you can do. And if you're not bedridden, are you there when the church meets to pray? Has God given you 5 talent opportunities to meet with the church to pray? Great opportunities to see the kingdom of God come, to see the glory of God at Amiens Park. Or are those 5 talent opportunities just rotting in the ground? Now don't be prickly with me at asking the question about the prayer meeting, because one day you'll have to give account to Christ for all those opportunities you had to come and pray. Faithfulness. That old lady couldn't do much, could she? But what she could do, she did. Has God made you a natural leader? Then don't make disciples after yourself. Make disciples after Christ. Don't set up a rival sphere. And if you're not a leader, support those who do lead without moaning and without dragging your feet. Has the Lord made you valiant for the truth? You've got that sort of temperament. The truth ignites you. Well, make sure you turn your fire in the right direction. Turn it on the spiritual hosts of wickedness. And if you're of a different temperament, support and encourage and comfort those who are on the front line fighting hand to hand. Are you home during the day with the children? Well, how many opportunities then there are to befriend other mums for Jesus' sake? Are you at work? Then provoke your colleagues to ask why, by living on earth by the values of heaven. Are you at school? Then, unlike everyone else, obey the teacher. And be the friend to the loser, the one who's excluded, the one who's left out, and be kind. And Christian friends, after you've worked and you've eaten, and very important, we spend time together as a family, and you've brushed your teeth and you've slept, how many hours does that leave you with? How many hours do you have left? 5 talents? 2 talents? 1 talent? And how do you spend those hours? Do you spend those hours caring, practically loving your brothers and sisters, all the things you can do to them, all the way you can stretch out your hands to help? Are you stuck into the work of the church? Are you investing your life in the kingdom of God? Christian friends, faithfulness. His Lord said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many things. If I can trust you with a little, I can trust you with a lot. Enter into the joy of your Lord." It's faithfulness, isn't it? So, Christian friend, are you clever? Well, don't bury your talent in the ground of arrogance. Use your cleverness for Christ. Are you determined? Well, don't bury your determination in the ground of stubbornness. Be determined for Christ. Get trading. Are you sensitive? Well, don't bury it in the ground of always taking offence and always going round with that look on your face that someone else has got me. Be sensitive to the needs of others. Have you had a Christian upbringing? That's a 5-talent upbringing, isn't it? Well, don't bury it in the ground in feeling, well, I'm a bit further along than those, and I see things that they don't see. And actually, you don't have to teach me so much because I'm already quite a long way along. Get trading. Add to your 5-talent experience and upbringing and teaching and learning and all those great foundations that have been put into you. Build upon it another 5. Are you calm? Well, don't bury it in the ground of being cold. Use your calmness to reassure the faint-hearted. Are you sympathetic? Well, don't bury it in the ground of indulging the sins of others. But put your arm round people and bear their burdens with them. Are you strong? Well, don't bury it in the ground of getting your way. Use your strength in the service and blessing of others. Washing feet, being there to help bear the burdens. Have you had hard experiences? You know, there can be great blessings from God. If you had hard experiences, you can look back on those moments which maybe tore you apart, which maybe broke your heart. Well, those hard experiences, don't bury them in the ground of self-pity. But draw alongside those in need, because you will understand in a way that others don't. Do you see faithfulness? That's what Jesus is looking for. Now, we're not all John Wesleys, who didn't feel tired until he was in his 70s. Can you imagine that? Didn't feel tired until he was in his 70s. Extraordinary, isn't it? And we're not all Jim Elliots, who burned for Jesus with a ferocious intensity. Some of us just aren't made like that. We just couldn't sustain that sort of intensity and love for Christ. We're not all Adoniram Judsons, who kept going against impossible odds. And you think, how does this man do it? Not more than we can do, but not less than you can do. But what you can do. 5 talents, says Christ, I want 5 more. 2 talents, 2 more. 1 talent, 1 more. There's always something you can do, to each according to his ability. So, Christian friends, no excuses. God is looking for faithfulness. Are you faithful? God has put you in this church, hasn't he? That's by the decree of God. God's designed that. That's where God has put you. It's all sort of accident and chance you sort of wandered into this place and I'm here now. God put you here, didn't he? Do you believe that? God put you here. Why did he put you here? He put you here so you use your talents for his glory and for the building of the church. So are you faithful in the work of the kingdom, in the work of the church? But there's a second application, and it's this. How seriously God views sins of omission. Verse 24. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not scattered. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, here, there, have what's yours. Now, at one level, if you think about it, he's kept the talent safe, hasn't he? Hasn't spent the talent, hasn't squandered it. 1 talent was given to him, he gives 1 talent back. What's wrong with that? He's apparently done nothing wrong. But you see, that's just it, isn't it? He's done nothing. And because of what he's failed to do, because of the absence of faithful, fruitful service, because his life is not bound up with his master's service, what is he called? Verse 26, you wicked and lazy servant. And Jesus throws more light into this, on this rather, in the verses that follow. Look at verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all his holy angels with him, so here we are, the last judgment, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. Well, who are the goats? On what basis is the separation? Verse 41. Then he will say to these on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger and you did not take me in. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison and you did not visit me. Did you hear that? Christ keeps saying, you did not, you did not, you did not. These are the people who buried their talent in the ground. Then they will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to you? Then he will answer them, saying, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, and he's pointing to those who are the believers. He says in the earlier verses, one of these are these my brethren, you did not do it to me. Do you see, they call him Lord, but there's no love for Christ. And we know there's no love for Christ because there is no love for his people. The evidence that they have no love for Christ is they have no love for his people. And so instead of their actions towards his people betraying a love for the king, they do nothing for God's people. In fact, they probably think that God's people should be doing things for them. They bury their talent in the ground. They're not really interested in the people of God, in the church of Jesus Christ, in his kingdom. It's what they don't do that condemns them that day. How seriously God views sins of omission. To have the opportunity and do nothing. To have the opportunity to do good to God's people, the least of these his brethren, and to do nothing. That's why they're condemned. So, Christian friend, do you love Christ? Then let that love reveal itself in a thousand practical expressions of love towards his brethren, towards fellow believers. Is that what it says, verse 35? For I was hungry and you gave me food, I was thirsty and you gave me drink, I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me, I was sick and you visited me, I was in prison and you came to me. And then verse 40, surely I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. So, do you love Jesus? Then actively love his people today. And these are the people he's given you to love. It's these people. It's people next to you. It's people in front of you. People behind you. People you bump into. The people you talk to after the service. These are the people he's given you to love. These are the people that you're to look after and care for and do good to. It's these people. If you love him, actively love them today. Do you expect to serve a glorified Christ on his return? Then serve a far from glorified people today. The one talent servant did nothing. Did he? Faced with those opportunities, he did nothing. He was unfaithful. And to our final application. Christian friend, look for the master's return. Verse 19, after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. One day Jesus will return. One day I will stand before the judgment seat of Christ. It's going to be one of the most lonely experiences of all, perhaps, isn't it? I'll be standing there alone, giving account to him. One day he'll settle the accounts. One day he will examine the value of my work. And that day will come sooner than I think. So let the realities of that day shape the priorities of this day. We're reading some of the Psalms in the late 80s and 90s. And I was really struck by a phrase in Psalm 89. A psalmist says, remember how short my time is. How short my time is. I've been here about, 17 and a half years now? It's just gone like that. I was 49 last week. Can't believe it. How many years have I got left? How short my time is. It'll soon be gone. It's a psalmist, he prays to God, remember how short my time is. It's that sense, oh Lord, don't leave me to think I've got every time, all the time. Don't leave me as though I would think that I'm never going to die, that I'm the exception, that I'm not going to have to stand before you. Remember how short my time is. So don't invest your life in the kingdom that's passing away. Labor for the kingdom that is to come. Don't shrink from the sharpness and humiliation of following Jesus. Labor for that well done, good and faithful servant. Lord, I gained 5 more. I gained 2 more. I gained 1 more. I knew I could trust you. Well done, good and faithful servant. You are faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Do you see? Is Christ a hard man? Who drives his servants on, cracks the whip and says, come on! And at the end, shuts them out of the blessing. Is that what he's like? No. No, says Jesus, if you've worked hard to increase my kingdom, then come and share the kingdom with me. If you've invested your life in my cause, then come, welcome, share in the benefits. If you've denied yourself, if you've put yourself out for me, if you've taken up that cross and followed me, then you've borne the cross, it's time to wear the crown. Reign with me. I'll make you ruler over many things. The kingdom you've been laboring for, says Jesus, is yours. In fact, more will be given to you than you could possibly imagine. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. And when the Son of God says abundance, you know it's an overflowing superabundance. And says Jesus, I'm not just giving you your portion, because I want you to come and share in my portion. For the joy that was set before me, says Jesus, now you come and share in my joy. And our heartbeats and our song, they will be one. My joy will be yours and your joy will be mine. Come, share these things with me. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Christian friend, is that what you want? Is it? Then live for Jesus now, without restraints, and you will have no regrets. But to be counted a servant, and to come on that day with nothing for Jesus, to be a wicked and lazy servant, then verse 29, even the little you have will be taken from you. And Jesus finishes the parable on a downbeat note, doesn't he? And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. When I am dying, how glad I shall be that the lamp of my life has been blazed out for thee. I shall not mind whatever I gave, labor or money, one sinner to save. I shall not mind that the path has been rough, that thy dear feet led the way is enough. When I am dying, how glad I shall be that the lamp of my life has been blazed out for thee.